right, welcome back, everybody. We will continue our meeting now, and we're going to start with a discussion on commodity loans, and I give the floor to Craig.
Thank you, Hans. So yes, as Hans says, Agenda Paper 12F. Back in July 2018, the board discussed a possible narrow scope project on commodity loans and related transactions. At that meeting, the board asked us to research the feasibility of such a project. Since the last board discussion, we have spoken to banks, corporate commodity entities, and a standard setting body for precious metals trading. We have summarized the information we obtained from those stakeholders, as well as information obtained prior to July 2018 in paragraphs 10 to 37 of the paper. Paragraphs 38 to 46 contain our staff analysis. Based on the information available to us at present, we recommend that the board does not add a narrow scope standard setting project on commodity transactions to its work plan at this time. We also recommend that the board consider referring to commodity transactions in a list of potential projects to be described in a request for information on the agenda consultation. Doing so would allow the board to consider commodity transactions in the context of other possible standard setting projects on its work plan. We have one question for the board, which is on page 13 of the paper. We ask whether the board agrees with our recommendation not to add a narrow scope standard setting project on commodity transactions to its work plan, and to consider referring to commodity transactions in the list of potential projects to be described in the request for information on the agenda consultation. So I'll hand it over to the board members to discuss.
Okay, who would like to comment? Françoise?
Thank you, and thank you for the analysis. I think the analysis of the staff, I mean, is pretty convincing in highlighting that there would be a good research effort needed in order to well define a scope or whatever we could do. So on that basis, I really support both recommendations.
Anne?
Thank you for the paper, and thank you for how well you've covered all the issues that we have here. And I really think we arrive at a point where we can't make any other way ahead than deciding that scope is just too difficult and we would need more work to determine what scope should be. So we have arrived at the convenience of being able to say refer to a gender consultation. I know that that is further off now, but I don't see any way for us to progress this project when we don't know how to handle scope and we don't know how it fits in terms of urgency with our other things on our work program. So I do agree where the staff have arrived. I think you've argued the position well. Thank you.
Rika?
Hans, thank you. I support the staff recommendation. I truly think it is very difficult and almost impossible to identify the specific transaction of the commodity loan to make the scope narrow scope amendment. And I truly think, according to my past experience, of course, the frequency of consultation of those different commodity loans have been not so low, and we've seen the diversity in accounting treatment, but still, when I look at some kind of the consultation document from my colleague, every time something, some small elements are a little bit different one another, and that small element makes the outcome of the accounting transaction completely different from one another. So I think we need to take time to look into further to analyze whether or not we should go. So I agree with the staff recommendation to include this item in the agenda consultation. Thank you.
Okay, I see no other interested parties in talking. So can I see whether we support the staff's recommendations? Sue?
Oh, Sue is frozen.
See, yeah, Sue.
Yes. Yeah. My hand is up though.
Okay.
14 in favor.
All right. We agree to do nothing for now.
Okay.
Our stakeholders will be happy. All right. Thank you very much, Van. Shoban is the next speaker. Thank you very much, Greg. Shoban is going to lead us through through three papers.
Actually, I'll be doing the tee up on that. So
okay, Javed.
I'll start the discussion.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you. So we'll move on to agenda papers 12G to 12I. These papers summarize feedback on the exposure draft that we issued last year on deferred tax related to assets and liabilities arising from a single transaction, which proposed a narrow scope amendment to IS 12. Now, as a reminder, we are not asking you to make any decisions at this meeting. However, to help develop our paper for future board meetings, we're just asking if you have any initial thoughts on the feedback. Agenda paper 12G includes some background information and provides an overview of the feedback. As explained in that paper, almost all respondents agree with the board's decision to address the accounting for deferred tax related to leases and decommissioning obligation. They also support requiring entities to recognize deferred tax on these transactions. Now, many respondents support the proposed amendments as they were proposed, but there are also many others who disagreed with the proposed amendments or particular aspects of those proposals. And they have suggested some alternative approaches that the board could consider. So agenda paper 12H then summarizes the main matters that were raised by respondents. And in particular, many expressed concerns on the capping proposal and said applying that proposal would be complex and burdensome. And respondents also had concerns about some other aspects which are in that paper, such as the reassessment of deferred taxes, the scope of the proposed amendments, the attribution of tax deductions and how that's done, as well as the accounting for advanced lease payments and initial direct cost. So those are discussed in, I think, it's paragraph 15 to 33 of that paper. Then moving on to agenda paper 12I, this paper discusses the alternative approaches that respondents have suggested. Those are summarized in paragraphs 2 to 9. And it also discusses feedback on the proposed transition requirements, request for application guidance and examples, and other comments that we received. So with that, I will turn your attention to the question on page 7 of agenda paper 12G and ask for your thoughts on the feedback.
Okay, Mary.
Yes, thanks, Hans. Javed, I guess I'm not really surprised by the feedback we've had, but I wanted to emphasize something that is going to be important in the development of recommendations, decisions about this project, and that is that we decided that we would try to do something on the basis that we could do it as a narrow scope project. And a narrow scope project, I think, necessarily has kind of a limited budget in terms of time spent exploring issues, how big a project it is in terms of the number of scenarios in which we give guidance, et cetera. And I am a bit concerned when I look at the feedback we've received, both those that said, this is good, but you should go further, and those that said, yes, you should address this issue, but back up and start again and do it a different way, that it fast becomes that if we followed either of the built on the that input, that this could fast become a very expensive narrow scope project and really not meet that definition anymore. So to me, I think the thing that I'd like to have a staff evaluation of when you come back with a recommendation is, do we think that the benefits exceed the costs of something that maintains enough scope discipline to genuinely qualify as a narrow scope amendment? And I think this is an issue, I'm not sure what your timing plans are, that it would be helpful to perhaps have input from interpretation committee members on also. Thanks.
Nick?
Thanks, Hans. So thank you for the papers, having through the papers and some of the detailed comment letters. I have to say any enthusiasm I had for our work here has kind of disappeared. I'm disturbed by or worried by the comments and the feedback about the complexity of our proposals and also the potential for unintended consequences. But it led me to go back to the original worked example that staff very kindly provided when we first looked at this, and I think it was a very helpful example. And just to remind you, it showed without recognising a deferred tax asset, you could have a tax rate of between 14 and 36% over the life of a lease compared to a steady 20% tax rate if you did recognise that asset. But I think that the issue with that is it's just looking at a single lease, and in practice, many entities will operate with portfolios of leases. And so I could replicate that with a series of five-year rolling leases, which again would take me back to that 20% rate. You could argue that's a naive approach and that life, again, is more complicated and entities have to deal with growth. But you start to model that, and I started to model a growth scenario of 10%. And where I ended up on that basis with a series of five-year rolling leases is I get to a tax rate of 21 to 23%. So actually quite a tight range. And that's going back, comparing to our base number, which is recognizing the deferred tax asset of a tax rate of 20%. And even then, I wonder whether that's overstated. And it's overstated because 10% is actually quite a high growth rate to be going for. And also that the example we have, the only cost that we have in that example is the cost of a lease asset. Now, in virtually all circumstances, there'll be other costs involved. And so all of those things will dilute the impact on the reported tax rate. And so I think, not in all, but in many circumstances, we're coming down to talk about a small single digit differentiation between the case where we have our steady 20% tax rate when we recognize a deferred tax asset and something which wouldn't be much different from that, perhaps 21, 22% at most, in most practical circumstances when we don't. So I'm really, having looked at the feedback, taken that on board, brought that together with those thoughts, I'm starting to feel that, you know, we're really stretching the cost-benefit equation here. And as I say, my enthusiasm for pursuing this is waning.
Sue? So, Sue, we cannot see you or hear you.
Convinced on. Am I?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Start again. Yeah.
Okay. I was just going to say that I think that Nick wasn't that convinced on cost benefit even before we put the exposure draft out. So maybe this just reinforced his view. But I think it's, if we really believe in this sort of deferred tax accounting and this and the relationship between the sort of effective interest rate, the effective tax rate, and what gets reported, that we still do need to look at whether we can get something to work here. I think we do need to be careful not to make this so complicated that it puts people off. I was interested, for example, that some, and I'm looking at what the FRC said in the second paper about, well, just easier to make, ask people to assume that the deductions related to the lease asset rather than having something more complicated might be a route to go down. So I guess my request, suggestion would be that if there's any sort of simple way of simplifying things for people, even if it were not, you know, the most profound conceptual basis for doing things, I think we should be looking at opportunities to try and do that in this situation to reduce the difficulty of the accounting, to improve the sort of cost-benefit equation that Nick was just talking about.
Rika and then Mary.
Oh, thank you, Hans. I think I've seen the diversity in practice in connection with this accounting treatment. So it's really helpful if there is something we can do to make it a narrow amendment. But I still have a sympathy with the people who say the cost of the finalizing the amendment might outweigh the expected benefit of doing this, especially when I consider the, I think when we discuss about the side of the deferred liability, I think we can make it a discussion narrower. But if we look at the other side, the asset side of the deferred tax asset, the entity also need to consider and take into consideration the realization of deferred tax assets. So that will also make the things more complicated. So I really want to see how the staff can analyze the cost and benefit to proceed this project.
Mary?
Hans, I just wanted to clarify something about my remarks, which is I was not trying to be subtle in terms of saying I think we should abandon this project, because, as you know, subtle is not something I do regularly. I really was just trying to say I think we have to be very disciplined and thoughtful about trying to respond to all the feedback that we got on our proposal, and not try to bend over backwards to address every issue that was raised. I think the staff is going to have to think about whether there is something that they can propose that they think, you know, that we carry forward that meets the cost benefit test, that meets the definition of narrow scope, even if it does not respond to all the potential issues identified. So I just wanted to clarify that was not me trying to say let's walk away from this now.
Okay, Daryl.
And probably just following on from Mary then, I don't think we should be walking away from it. I do think that we've got a lot of feedback that suggests we need to think quite carefully and quite hard about the solution that we proposed and see whether or not there's a different angle that we can come at it with. But I think looking at the feedback, was not overwhelmingly positive about the proposal that we'd made, but there were a lot of good ideas that seemed to have been suggested in that feedback. And I think we need to, perhaps first from a staff perspective, but obviously the board as well, just think about how we can go about, or whether we can go about addressing that, to Mary's terms, within a reasonable cost-benefit outcome. So I wouldn't say we walk away from it now, but I think that we do have to think quite hard about how we take it forward.
Okay, can we move on to the next paper?
Hey, you, Jeff.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thank you very much again for your feedback. That was very helpful. So with that, I'll move on to the last paper in this long series of papers. The last paper is it summarizes the committee's March 2020 meeting. It's the IFRIC update. And at the March meeting, the committee finalized 4 agenda decisions and published 2 tentative agenda decisions. So I'll start with the tentative decisions, which begin on page 2. The first relates to what we discussed in Agenda Paper 12A earlier, so I won't spend any more time on that. It relates to a sale and leaseback transaction with variable payments. The second tentative decision addresses how an entity accounts for deferred tax related to undistributed earnings in a subsidiary when tax is payable only on distribution. So with that, I will move on to the final agenda decision then. We'll start on page 6. The first 3 relate to the restatement and translation of the results and financial position of hyperinflationary foreign operations. These agenda decisions deal with the interaction of the requirements in IAS 21 and IAS 29. They came to the committee as a result of Argentina becoming hyperinflationary in 2018. The last agenda decision, which starts on page 9, relates to cost incurred to fulfill a contract with a customer. And it was a question about whether to apply IAS 38 or IFRS 15 to those costs. The committee concluded that the entity applies IAS 38 to the fact pattern discussed. So with that, I will stop here and ask if you have questions on any of the topics discussed in the March IFRIC meeting.
That is not the case.
All right. Thank you very much then. That concludes our series of papers.
Okay. Oh, well, that went even faster than I thought. I suppose there's no way that we can do the PIR right now, or shall we just take the break?
I can check with the team, but I think it's going to be a longer session, so you might want to break.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't we break till it's 12:45, so a bit more than a half an hour from now, or is that okay with you guys, or do you want 45 minutes? Yeah, everybody seems to like it. So we resume our meeting at 12:45 British time. All right,
yes,
see you
British
later.
Time. Thank you.
It's also good for you, Anne.
Yeah, very good for me, Hans, thank you.
Yes. What time is it over there now?
It's 7 p.m.
Oh, still early, okay.
Seven,
all right.
So it's still good.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll see you in a while.
See you all later.
Okay.